Thank you, brother. This evening, I have some thoughts along the line about truth, deception, and disinformation. And it's a spiritual warfare that's going on for the hearts and minds. And I've been seeing several things over the last, since we've been traveling, some common threads that I'll talk about in just a second. But I was ill-equipped up until, you know, I will say recently to handle this subject, you know, and I think it needs to be addressed. So you'll see what I mean in just a second. This is the subject that I've had struggled with when I was young, and I think many of your young will testify that they have strugglings with this too. Now, two big lies out there. Satan is all-powerful, always present, all-knowing, reading our minds, having power to afflict us whenever he chooses. That's it's kind of a few things there, but that's what is presented out there many times. The other one is man has supernatural power within himself or can tap into a community force. That's the other lie. And as a child, you know, there was, unbeknownst to, I'm sure, my parents, there was witchcraft going on in my school. And, there was this common belief that, amongst the kids that you could tap into this power, this unknown force, and you could use that force. And many of our kids believe that. Even if you think your kids don't believe that, that's present out there. And I seen Bradley address this in Arizona when I was just there last week. They're addressing the superheroes with their kids, you know. They're idols, if you will. They'll wear these uniforms. And Bradley addressed it to Jesus Christ, telling the kids is their superhero. And Arizona was using the example that, you know, these superheroes, you know, they have faults. But if you want a superhero, look at some of the superheroes of the Bible and the Book of Mormon. Look to Jesus Christ. And, you know, I love fantasy as much as the rest of them. Sci-fi, anybody that knows me, I love that. But, you know, some of our kids are vulnerable. So, you know, they're addressing it. I take my hat off to some of the Sunday schools that are addressing these issues because it is real. And, you know, you might not think it's a problem. But let me go on to this next thing here. Superhero movies. You know, which one of us hasn't seen a superhero movie out there? And you say it's make-believe. And I know it's make-believe. But it taps into stuff that kids are believing, like Star Wars, the Force be with you. And I know we've all heard that. Let the Force be with you. And it's present in our high schools, even in our grade schools, that there's this power they can tap into, whether they mix this thing up or mix that thing up or say these words. And that's what they did at my school back all those years ago. And I know it's present. Harry Potter, we all know the dangers of that. You know, it's fantasy, yes. But what are they promoting? The idea that people can tap into this and do these things. That's what they're promoting. And, you know, I don't want to speak against all these superhero movies, but we have to educate our children. There is not that power out there they can tap into. There is not that unknown power. We have to educate them where that power comes from. You know, there's an idea that fortune tellers, they know all. And even amongst the Christian community, we have an idea that these fortune tellers, you know, most of them are bogus, we know that, but we have an idea that Satan sometimes reveals things to these fortune tellers. Totally false. Totally false. And I'll bombard you with several scriptures here in a minute to show you that these things are not true. Black cats, how many of us, black cats, we were taught that they were bad luck, walking under ladders. Do any of us avoid those things? Will we go out of our way to walk around a black cat or a ladder? believe in bad luck. Where do we get these things? Fortune cookies. How many have opened a fortune cookie? She said, yeah, you know, that's right. That's right on. How'd they know that? Horoscopes. Anybody look at horoscopes? Read those secretly. Say, oh, yeah, they know. Pregnancy tests. You know, when I was a kid, the women would get together when somebody was pregnant, and they would hold this cork and this needle up, and it would go like this. Say, oh, you're going to have a girl. You know, that was before ultrasound. You're going to have a girl, or you're going to have a boy. Oh, you know, circle is bad news. You know, and they would believe that. That's true, they would say. Yeah, that's how many I've had. Okay, now these are all your future kids. Where do we think that power comes from? Tapping into an unknown power? I think not. Magic 8-balls, I was given one as a kid. You'd flip it up, ask it a question, flip it up, have the answer. Why do our parents give us those things? What power do they think is possibly into that 8-ball? Ouija boards, they were common. You could think, and that thing would spell. You know, my mother said when she was a kid, I don't know why, she didn't get me one, by the way, but she'd say, you know, we put it away when it started doing its own thing. Why? Because that is not an unknown power. That was a known power. And that's what Satan uses. These are unknown power to the world, but we have to be ambassadors. It's our job to educate our kids, to have our kids educate other kids, and to know the truth. There's not an unknown power out there. We have to let our kids know. We have to know that. You can't tap in. I think most of us mature Christians know that there's no unknown power just in the universe that we can tap into. There's only two powers out there. And it's not Jesus Christ's power. You know whose it is. Hinduism, you know, they make a religion out of it. They got over a sixth of the population out there that believe that they're going to somehow within themselves, they aspire to the next level, or if they're not so good, they become a cow. But they have it within themselves to raise themselves into this bliss and join the universe. Sixth of the population. New Agers, several of us know about that. That's where you tap in and there's this unknown thing and you become gods. Same philosophy. A dangerous, dangerous philosophy. And so we've talked a little bit about Satan's power. This is Satan copies everything the Lord does, including being a light of the world. He declares himself being the morning star. He has set up his unholy trinity. He has his own abominable church, counterfeit ministers, counterfeit doctrine, performs signs and lying wonders to deceive. Has false tongues, false prophecies. Now I ask, why? Why does Satan, why don't he tell us the truth? You know, he can give a lot of pleasure. You know, why doesn't he come out with that message? Well, he does. But why doesn't he also tell us, you know, he can give us power? Okay, he might tell us that too. But why does he tell us the whole story? Why does he do that? Why does he make up these things and copy? Let's turn to Alma, 1666. Page 415, Alma 16, you got it. It says this, and Coriander put forth his hand and wrote, saying, I know that I am dumb, for I cannot speak. I know that there is nothing save the power of God that could bring upon me, yea, and I also knew there was a God. But behold, the devil hath deceived me, for he hath appeared unto me in the form of an angel, and said unto me, Go and reclaim this people, for they have gone astray after an unknown God. And he saith unto me, There is no God. Yea, he taught me which I should say, and I have taught his words, and I taught them because they were pleasing unto the carnal mind. He appears unto the angel as an angel of light. You know, he doesn't appear who he is. He doesn't come out and say who he is. But, you know, this guy had to be pretty gullible want the things he was presenting. If this personage appears to you and tells you that there's no God, well, how are you standing there? I just can't get my mind around this, how he could be deceived. It's because he desired those things. Why doesn't he appear and tell the whole story? Well, this gives us a hint on that question. 2 Thessalonians 2:8. I will tell you that, just to backtrack a little bit, I was, probably 11th grade, raised in the church, and I thought, and I wondered, is there an unknown power I could tap into? I started to believe it. I was raised Church of Christ, you know, and I spent my whole time in church, and I started to believe into the lie that, you know, I didn't go for that, but I, you know, do they have something there? Could it be? And I just wasn't taught, just to tell you that there's that ignorance we have to correct. Verse 8. And then that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming after the workings of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of the unrighteousness in them that perish, because they received not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. For this cause God shall send them strong delusions, that they should believe a lie. That's what Coriander did. He believed the lie. Same reason he did. That they might be damned who believed not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. That's why they buy these half-lies from Satan. He tells them that he can give them power. He tells them that, yeah, there's that power you can tap into that he's not lying about. He has some things to offer. He can give them pleasure. What he doesn't tell them? He doesn't tell them the rest of the story. Yeah, you can have a few pleasurable years. No happiness. You'll never be happy. You'll never be content. The rest of the story, you're gonna go with me, and there'll be some gnashing and wailing out there forever and ever and ever. He forgets to tell them that part, because that's not very appealing, is it? Come on, join my church. A lot of gnashing of teeth later on. Tells them half-truths. Deceives them. Thinks they're unknown power to trap them. Nephi. These are the predictions and prophecies, I should say, not predictions, prophecies of our day. 2 Nephi 12:11. Yea, and there shall be many which say, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. And it shall be well with us. And there shall also be many which say, eat and drink and be merry, nevertheless fear God. That's like the message we heard earlier. Just do this little thing. That's it. Fear God. Just have faith. He will justify committing a little sin. Yea, a little lie. Take advantage of one because of his words. Dig a pit for thy neighbor. There is no harm in this. And do all these things, for tomorrow we die. And if it so be we are guilty, God will beat us with a few stripes, and at last we shall be saved in the kingdom of God. That's the same, you know, it's wrapped up a little differently, but it's comes to us a little differently like this, probably you'll hear it. Just raise your hand, touch the screen, say this little prayer, and you're forever saved. And people are willing to do that. They want to do the minimum thing they can do and still go to heaven. Because they like the idea that they can do all these things that Satan tells them and then go to heaven later on. That last part doesn't appeal to them. That gnashing of teeth stuff. Not really thrilling to them. So he tells them these other lies. We talked about the temptation of Christ. I want to paraphrase some of that. Luke 4. And we talked earlier, one of the brothers talked about the temptation of Christ, and started off after he'd fasted for 40 days, he was hungry. And the devil appeared to him and offered and told him, thou art the Son of God, command the stone to be made of bread. And the Lord told him, this bread shall, what was he doing? What was he appealing to? You're hungry. You can stop your fast now. It's not time for you yet, but you can stop your fast now. And then he appeals to the man side. He wasn't going to get anywhere with Christ, but he didn't know that. He appeals to him. You can make bread. Son of God, you can make this bread, this stone right here, bread. He knew he could. Christ knew he was. But he appealed to man's, and that's what he appeals to us. He appeals to a man's desires within his heart, his humanness. It didn't wash with Christ, but he had no idea it wouldn't. Next one. It says he took him to a high mountain and showed him the kingdoms of the world. Again, he appealed to him that power. He does have power. He's the prince in the power of the air, isn't he? And he can offer people power. And I've heard somebody tell me that they were offered strength and power if they would just yield to that power. He didn't present it as an unknown power, but he didn't tell who he was either. Appeal to that sense a man wants power. Third one. Let me start reading with number 9. And he brought him to Jerusalem and set him in a pinnacle of the temple. And that would be a steep incline in the temple. And said unto him, if thou be the Son of God, cast down hence. For it is written, he shall give his angels charge over there to keep thee. And in their hands thou shalt bear thee up, lest any time thou shalt dash thy foot against a stone. Well, this is the promise not to just Jesus Christ, this is the promise to us also. The Lord protects us, and you bet if Christ jumps down there, he's going to be protected. But Christ wasn't going to fall into that. Again, appealing to he wanted him to think, yeah, I'm the Son of God, I can do this. Christ was without any reproach. Didn't tempt him in the least. But again, the devil didn't know this. Why else tempt him if he knew he was not going to turn it down, The devil didn't know. Thought this would appeal to it. It would appeal to some people. And finally, let me read 12 and 13. And Jesus answering said unto him, it is said that thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. And when the devil had ended all temptation, he departed from him for a season. And so the other point that I want to bring up later is the devil departed. He wasn't with him anymore. He was gone. And we'll bring that up back later. Revelations 12, 7 through 10. And I want to show you what the devil was doing. And how he talks to God, and how he used to. He's not our friend, to say the least. 12:7, and it says this. And there was a war in heaven. And Michael, his angels, fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought against his angels, and prevailed not, neither was there found place any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent, called the devil, and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world, he was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation, strength, and the kingdom of our God, and his power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accuseth them before our God day and night. And that's the power. I'm not going to go into the other part, but that's the part I wanted to bring out. That's what Satan used to do. He used to be before God day and night and accuse them. And, you know, he's not up there to God to say, yeah, that's a pretty nice guy you got over there. He's to accuse him. He's in his face, accusing our brethren. Let's see what, an example of that in Job. First Job. Verse 6, it says this, "And there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. And Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, Where hast thou come? Where comest thou? And Satan answered the Lord and said, From going to and fro on the earth and walking up and down it." So Satan has to go. He's not omnipresent, is where I'm going with one of these things. He chooses where he's going to be. Certainly he has evil spirits that can go other places too. But this is an angel that has to choose and pick where he's going to be at. And he says, and the Lord said to Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job?" You know, that's a strange question if we just read that. But that's why I read that one before. What is Satan doing? You know, he's coming up there to present himself with the other angels. And you know what he's doing? He's saying, what about this guy? What about this guy? And he's throwing it in the Lord's face. And so the Lord comes back at him. He says, "Have you considered my servant Job? That there is none like him on the earth, perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil." And Satan answered the Lord and said, "Thou doest Job fear God for naught? Hast thou not made a hedge about him and about his house and about all that he has on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and thou his substance has increased in the land." He's saying, I can't get to him. You've got a hedge around him. You know, I can't just go in to bother him. You know, I can't do it. He's one of yours. It's just like the other verse we read. This is God's servant. You just can't go in there and mess with him. Not without approval. "But put him thy hand in, sorry, but put forth thy hand now and touch forth all that he has, and he will curse thee to thy face." You know? He's saying, just take away all that he has, and he's going to curse you. You know, take down that hedge. Let me have just a piece of what he owns. And he's going to curse you. And the Lord said unto him, "Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thy hand." So Satan went forth from his presence of the Lord. And so he left. He goes back down to the earth, and he takes all that Job has. And you know the story. He's sitting there scraping. That's a little early. He's down there, and one servant after another, and comes up and tells him. He brings forth fire to heaven from heaven. He has that kind of power. He kills his sheep. He sends forth great winds. So we're not to think that Satan is helpless. The prince in the power of the air can control the wind. He just has to be creative. He couldn't bring that wind and destroy Job, but he could destroy those of his own seed, those followers of his own. He brought his home down. He killed with the commanded armies to kill. And he finally, the Lord, he didn't get anywhere with that, so the Lord allowed him to touch his sin, his skin, and brought boils on him. So he has a lot of power if the Lord lets him. He's not able to do these things without the permission of us. And certainly the Lord chastises, but Satan is not, we don't have to fear that he's just going to all of a sudden. Can't do it. Can't do it. He has to have permission for one of his. That's the point I wanted to break there. But another one is, Satan comes and goes. He can't be everywhere at once. And I bring Satan's power up also in Egypt time. You know, he was able to copy some of those, you know, throw a snake down. He throws two snakes down, and God's snakes eat his snakes. He was able to bring forth frogs, bring forth the lice. He can't do that one. And then from there on out, he was limited. So he does have powers. It's minor compared to what God has. So we don't need to fear his powers. God has more power and can protect us. Colossians 1:15 and 16 says this: Who is in the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of every creature? For by him were all things created, that are in heaven, that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones, dominions, principalities, powers, all things were created by him and for him. That's Jesus Christ. He controls the power. You know, any power that Satan has is because Jesus Christ allows it. And that's the point I wanted to make there. God controls the power. We need not fear Satan's power because it was given by Jesus Christ. Satan comes, you know, another verse on that, resist Satan and he will flee from you. He comes and goes. Psalms. This is talking about how God is always present. No matter where we go, let's turn to that. Psalms 139. Seven through 13. Whether shall I go in thy spirit, or whether shall I flee from thy presence? That's a question. If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the utmost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. If I shall say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light above me. Verse 12. And the darkness hid not from thee, but thy night shineth as the day. And thy darkness and the light are both alike unto thee. For thou hast possessed my reins, and thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. It's telling us that no matter where we are, hell, heaven, we cannot hide from God's power. It's called omnipresent. That's not true with Satan. He picks and chooses. His demons pick and choose where they're going to be at, and that's not true with the Lord. He's ever watching. We can't do anything that he doesn't know about. It's a fallacy that's presented that, you know, the devil's always watching, always knows everything. It's not true. It is only God who knows the mind and the intents of man's heart. And that's called, help me out, all-knowing is what it means. Thoughts and desires, we heard that earlier. That only God knows the thoughts and desires of our heart. And we're taught, you know, on the world, that we're taught that the devil, oh, I thought that thought and the devil knows about it. Not true. He doesn't know the thoughts and intents of our heart. Now, if we say something, you know, and he happens to be around, or one of his spirits, sure. But he can't get into the deeper parts of our thoughts and our desires. And if you don't believe me, let's go to some verses. 2 Chronicles 6:30. Then hear thou from heaven thy dwelling place, and forgive, and render unto every man according all his ways, whose heart thou knowest. For thou only knowest the hearts of the children of men. That's under God's authority, under God's power only. It's not something Satan knows. Only God knows the hearts of man, not Satan. 2 Corinthians 2:9-11. For the Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep things of God. For what man knoweth the things of man, save the spirit of man which is in him? Even so, the things of God knoweth no man but the Spirit of God. You know, no man, no devil knows the things. It's the Spirit of God knows those things. Only his power knows those things. Revelations 2:23. And I will kill And I will kill her children with death, and all the churches shall know that I am he which searches the reins of the heart and hearts, and I will give unto thee every one according to your works. It's only God that can do this. Not Satan. There's no manpower that can do this. Only God. I want to give you a few more scriptures so you believe this. But behold, hearken ye unto me, and know that by the help of the all-powerful Creator in heaven, I can tell you concerning your thoughts, how ye are beginning to labor in sin, which sin appeareth very abominable unto me, yea, abominable unto God. It's by God in heaven that this, I think it was Alma, or sorry, it's Jacob. Jacob knew the thoughts of their hearts. The Holy Spirit told him. It's no man can have this power. No devil has this power. But God only. Alma 12, 110. And Ammon saith, yea, and he looketh down upon all the children of men, and he knoweth all our thoughts and the intents of our hearts. We've heard that again. For by his hands were they all created from the beginning. God knows that. Only God. Alma 9:4. For behold, he knoweth all our thoughts, thy thoughts. And that's why our brother was saying he knows our thoughts and our intents of our heart. Therefore, it's a just reward. Whatever we get, we can't deceive him. He knows. He knows our intents. We can't cheat on a test, as our brother said. We can't, no class curve here. He knows. For thou seest that thy thoughts are made known unto us by his Spirit. Man doesn't have those abilities except through the Holy Spirit. And our thought, Alma 9:24. And our thoughts will also condemn us in this awful state. We shall not dare look upon God. That's for the unrighteous. They're going to be convicted because they knew, and they will be convicted by the thoughts of their hearts. Hebrews 4:12. For the word of God is quick and powerful, sharper than a two-edged sword, piercing even to dividing asunder the soul and the spirit, and the joints and the marrow, which is discerner of the thoughts and the intents of the hearts. Consistent all the way through. But yet, you know, we think back, and like I say, I was confused, and if I was confused in high school, I know some of the kids that are confused about this. They give the devil credit for where it doesn't belong. And here's an example in Daniel 2:9-30. And the Chaldeans answered before the king, saying, there is not a man upon earth that can show the king this matter. Therefore, there is no king, no lord, no ruler that asketh such things that any magician, or astrologer or Chaldean. They were the magic men. They couldn't do it. They couldn't tell the dream of Nebuchadnezzar. Why couldn't they? Why couldn't they look on his dream and say, or look into his thoughts, knowing that thing? Because it wasn't their power. They don't have that ability. The astrologers can't do it. Only the God in heaven could reveal that thing to Daniel. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any king. But for their sakes, they shall make known the interpretation to the king, that thou mayest know the thoughts of thy hearts. Again, God knows the thoughts and hearts. He's the only one. Prophecy. You know, even by definition in the Bible, there's such a thing, it's specific and it's genuine. And I'll give you a couple of examples of that. And then they talk about false prophecies. False prophecy has no idea. It's a prediction. You go to these soothsayers, or these fortune tellers, or these tea readers, and all they can do is, you know, the devil can feed them information what's going on. Sure. Do they know the future? Not a clue. They can read the same scriptures as us. They know those things. But they can't divinely see into the future. They can't do it. A prophecy is specific and genuine. In the New Testament, discourse emanating from divine inspiration. By the definition, if we read, this is, comes out of Strong's, if we read that word prophecy, we know it's divinely inspiration. Declaring the purposes of God. Revealing hidden, especially for telling future events. It does not, power does not belong to Satan. It's divinely inspired, not Satan. Example of this. And Jesus said unto them, see ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And you recognize this. This is the temple. As it was going to be thrown down in just a few years, after 40 years after Christ dies on the cross, this temple is going to be taken down. They're going to take every rock, you know, every boulder out apart because the heat, I understand, from the temple, when they burned it, the gold melted in the rocks. And so they had to take the whole building apart. This is specific and genuine, a prophecy. And they could see it. It was going to happen. They published these things. And then it took place. Just 40 years that this thing happened. One in the Book of Mormon. Genuine and specific. It meaneth in a time that cometh, after all the house of Israel has been scattered and confounded, and the Lord God will raise up a mighty nation among the Gentiles. Yea, even in the face of this land. And it shall make them mighty above all. Above all. And to scattering my people, O house of Israel, and they shall scourge unto the people of this land. They shall be a scourge unto the people of this land. Well, you see, you might say, big deal. You know, of course we can do that. We're all powerful. Ask any question of any brother out there in India, who's the mightiest nation of all? America. There's no question on their mind. But what they don't think about. When this prophecy came about, United States looked about like this. You know, these nations over here, Michigan and so forth, about 1805, they started becoming states. It was just before that, you had the 13 colonies over there. And then 1803, that they purchased that land over there, the Louisiana Purchase. Nobody lived out there. The end of civilization, when the church was first forming, was Missouri. You know, they used the Great Frontier. They had all those names. Well, Missouri was the end of the world at the time of Joseph Smith. You know, Mexico, they just took over the land. It says in 1821 out there, Spain owned all that land out there. There was 10 million people that weren't slaves in this country. 10 million. You know, Mexico City has about 30 today, 30 million. Three times bigger, just Mexico City alone. That's what we looked like. We were not anywhere close in 1815, 1880. We weren't on the radar as far as a powerful nation. We were a nothing. That's like saying Portugal is going to be the power of the world in just a few years. That's crazy talk. Well, that's what came forth in 1829 and 1830. That was predicting they would be the mightiest nation on earth. It's no big deal for us today, but to predict Portugal in 10 years, in 50 years, Portugal is going to be the king of the world. You know, we'd all scoff at that, wouldn't we? Well, that's what they did in the Book of Mormon, but slowly. In 1900, we finally got, what are we down? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We're about the 10th one down in power. 1900. You know, we think we've always been that powerful. We were nothing. We were nothing back in those years. So it was a great prediction. It was genuine, and it was inspired, and it was specific, that revelation. Prophecy, 1 Corinthians 14, 24, and 25. But if all prophecy, and there come in one that believe not, or one that is unlearned, he is convinced of all, he judges of all, and there are secrets of the heart made manifest. So falling down on his face, he will worship God and report that God is in you of truth. And this was talking about prophecy, if you know how great it is. If one hears prophecy and it comes true, he's a believer. You know? The devil doesn't have that kind of power. He cannot predict with, you know, you read about some of these, we've done it, you know, some of these so-called inspired people, Nostradamus and all those. You read them, and I have no idea what they're saying. It's not genuine, and it's certainly not specific. God's promises and prophecy are very specific. There's hundreds of them. Very specific. They took place. We know it's true because they come true. And God in heaven is the only one that can do that. Otherwise, the devil would be done it from the very beginning. He would deceive all these nations. But he can't. He does not have that ability. Tell them things that which must shortly come, that they might know and remember the time of their coming, that they had been made known unto them beforehand, to the intent that they might believe. That's God's ace card, if you will. That prophecy. You know, I remember in there's some of these predictions down in the Yucatan. And this angel came to him and told him, you know, these four events are going to come. And then when the Book of Mormon comes forth, you know, that's going to be your book. And so there was a hurricane, and all these things did take place. And when the Book of Mormon came forth, man, they jumped on it. What was the purpose? It was so when those things were made known, they would believe it. That's the purpose of prophecy. Predict something so you know it's true. Those people know it's true. Satan does not have that power. Jeremiah 14:15. Therefore, thus saith the Lord concerning the prophets that prophesy in my name, I sent them not. Yet they say, sword and famine shall not be in this land, but the sword and famine shall those prophets be consumed. This is Jeremiah. What do you think happened to those false prophets? You think it took place? Surely did. Those false prophets were saying, nah, nothing's going to happen to us, King. There was 100 of them saying, nothing's going to happen to us. And Jeremiah says, by the Spirit of the Lord, says, they're going to be consumed. And they were consumed. I won't turn to all these, but Daniel, let's turn to Daniel 2:27 and 28. Daniel 2:27 says this. Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secrets which the king hath demanded, cannot the wise men and astrologers and musicians and the soothsayers show unto the king? But, you know, I don't know if I read this one before. It sounds awful familiar. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth the secrets and make known that the king of Nebuchadnezzar. What shall be in the latter days? And thy dream and thy vision upon the head in the bed are these. And he goes on to tell it. You know, these guys can't do it, but this is what's going to happen. In the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom, and it shall never be taken off. And that happened. And that happened in 1830. That image was standing there, and it happened just like the God of heaven told them. But yet the astrologers, the soothsayers, they had no idea. Genesis 48, and I'm nearing the end of my thing, I think. So I know it's a long day. 48 says this, and they said unto him, we have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpretation of it. And Joseph said unto them, do not the interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, and I pray you. He's telling him, the interpretations of future doesn't belong to man. It doesn't. There is no power in man. There is no power in Satan that can tell them the future. These soothsayers, these magicians, These guys, they can't predict the future. Interpretations belong to God. Have from the very beginning. Isaiah 45:21. Tell ye and bring them near. Yea, let them take counsel together. Who had declared this from ancient time? And that's a question. Who had told them from the time, that time? And I have, I not the Lord. I'm going to read that again. Who hath told it from that time? And that's a question. Have not I the Lord? And there is no God else beside me. A just God and a Savior, and there is none beside me. One other point that he's telling them. You know, there's no other gods. Nobody else has this ability. This is divine. And that's the future belongs to God. And there's several others. Another one from Isaiah. Remember the former things of the days of old, for I am God, and there is none else. I am God, and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning. And this is why. From ancient times, the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do my pleasure. And it's the proof. And it's the proof that we have in the Scriptures. We can testify. We know the future because it's always stood. He predicts it, God predicts it, and it comes to pass. That's why some of these sermons that we've had today, they tell us what's going to be in the future. That's our future. We know it's true. We've seen what's happened in the past. Isaiah 44, 7 and 8. And who, as I, shall call and shall declare it, and set an order for me, since I appointed the ancient people, and the things that are coming, and shall come. Let them show unto them. Fear ye not, neither be afraid. Have not I told thee that from that time, and have declared it? Yea, even my witnesses. Is there God beside me? Yea, there is no God. I know not any. And all these scriptures are, you know, have the purpose. I know there's a lot of them, but they say the same thing. And I'm kind of overwhelming you so you believe this. And, you know, you'll never be fooled on Satan's lies again. There is no God beside him. He is the only one that knows the future. He is the only one. There's no power in these soothsayers and these palmists and these tarot read leaver, you know, these guys that read tarot leaves. They don't know a thing. They might know what's going on in your house because they're watching you. Satan can do that. They certainly don't know the future. They can't predict what you're going to have for a baby 10 years from now. Oh, no wonder. Two more verses. I have declared the former things from the beginning, that they went forth out of my mouth, and show them. I did it suddenly, and they came to pass, because I knew that thou art obstinate. We're obstinate people, or at least Israel was. And thy neck is iron sinew, and thy brow is brass, and even from the beginning declared it unto thee. Before it came to pass, I showed it to thee, lest thou should say, my idol hath done it. Or done them. And my graven image, and my molten image, have commanded them. He's telling us those things that the devil uses, molten images, and all those other religions, they have no power to predict it. God said, this is going to happen, and it comes to pass. And he tells them it's going to come to pass, because he doesn't want Satan to get credit for it. And that's what he's doing today. Satan's getting a lot of credit out there. Or at least, you know, the ones that he's appointed, those soothsayers and these palm readers and so forth, they're getting credit for something they have no idea. It's not within Satan's power to tell them. I ask you this. Would Satan have taken God's challenge against Job had he known Job would have got twice as much riches after he's done? Had no idea what Job was going to do. You know, if he'd have known, yeah, I'm going to go tempt him. I know that, you know, as soon as I get done, he's going to, you know, God's going to bless him and give him twice as much wealth. You think he's going to go out there and do his little trickery? You think he's going to do that? It was a waste of his time. Not only that, but the guy he hated, Job, gets twice as much out of that. Has a lot more children. Would he have gone and tempted the Savior? I mean, that's bad news. Going and tempting Jesus Christ, had he known the outcome? No! I mean, you don't do that. I mean, even Satan wouldn't do that if he didn't thought he had a shot at convincing him. He had no shot. But yet he did it. Because he didn't know. He doesn't know what's going to work with us. He has no idea. He doesn't know what God's going to let him do. That's part of the problem. He doesn't know what God's going to let him do. What he's going to allow. Would Satan have went to war in heaven with God had he known the outcome? You know, if you know you're going to lose the battle, you don't pick a fight with God. You know, that we read about in Revelation 12. You don't do it. And this one. Would Satan have rebelled in the first place if he could see where he's going to go in the final end? I mean, that's just insane. He doesn't have this power. You know, it says angels desire to see those things that you guys are doing right now. Angels. Not even angels, you know, and Satan was one of them. They have no idea. They desire to look into the things we're looking at now. Here are the prophecies. You know, when Daniel's getting a prophecy, there's another one coming over and says, man, what did he say? What is that? They desire to see these things. Only God knows a lot of this stuff. You know, in the second coming, Jesus Christ, when he was on earth, didn't know his second coming. So you don't have to fear that any man out there knows the future, knows what your thoughts are. You know, and there's no power, these kids have to know, there's no power they can tap into that isn't coming from Satan or the true power, Jesus Christ. There's not some unknown power. We have to teach them. We have to be ambassadors, because I know, you know, that was a mystery to me. And I was a churchgoer. And the kids are tricked into these things. But, you know, there's some power they can tap into. A superhero that gets mad, and now he gets all this strength, you know. You know, that's the opposite message you want to be teaching them. To get angry gets a lot of power. We just have to be aware of these things. You know, I'm not a real downer on make-believe and all that, but we have to be wise in what we tell our kids. And they have to know these things. And I guess that's the end of my preaching service tonight. Thank you for your time. And we have, so I guess Dick will make the announcements for tomorrow morning. Thank you, brothers.